Hey, everybody. My name is Jim Shear, and here's the deal. I actually recorded a brand new episode of the Brouhaha yesterday, and I was just about to post it this morning when I found out that Fife Dog Malik Taylor of A Tribe Called Quest passed away. Now, as of this recording, they don't know how Fife Dog died, but he did have a kidney transplant in 2008, and then he has also been battling type 1 diabetes for a very long time. So, sad news in the world of music. Fife Dog is gone at the age of 45. Chuck D tweeted, "Fife, hip-hop and rap warrior, simple as that, breathed it and lived rhyme into sport. A true fire social narrator, my bro. Hashtag RIBeats, ATCQ forever." Of course, that ATCQ is A Tribe Called Quest. Now, as Beastie Boys fans, we know that there is a special bond between A Tribe Called Quest and the Beastie Boys. Beastie Boys don't tour with a lot of people. A Tribe Called Quest toured with the Beastie Boys on 94 Lollapalooza, and they also toured with them during the End the Round tour. And you may also remember that A Tribe Called Quest performed at the Tibetan Freedom Concert, I believe multiple times. I saw them when they performed live in Washington, D.C. So today, just send out your thoughts and prayers to the friends and family of Fife Dog. If you got a couple hours on your hand, watch the Tribe Called Quest documentary directed by Michael Rapaport called Beats, Rhymes, and Life, The Travels of a Tribe Called Quest. You may also remember that the Beastie Boys, speaking of that special bond, are featured, their photos, those little heads with the headphones on them, they're featured on the Tribe Called Quest album Midnight Marauders. And then wasn't that long ago in November when A Tribe Called Quest reunited on The Tonight Show to perform Can I Kick It? So sad news today. Following this, I will get into the regular episode of The Brouhaha, but I didn't want to post an episode of The Brouhaha without mentioning Fife Dog, who I don't know if he passed away last night or this morning, but Fife Dog, once again, dies at the age of 45. So I leave you with this, and then if you'd like, you can listen to the rest of The Brouhaha today.
Yo, microphone check, 1, 2, what is this? The 5-foot assassin with the roughneck business. I float like gravity, never had a cavity. Got more rhymes than the one that's got family. No need to sweat Arsenio to gain some type of fame. No shame in my game, cause I always be the same. Styles upon styles upon styles is what I have. You wanna diss the Fifer, but you still don't know the half. I sport New Balance sneakers to avoid a narrow path. Messing right with this against the size of the... I never have stuff, cause I'm not a half-stepper. Drink a lot of soda, so they call me Dr. Pepper. Refuse to compete with BS competition. Your name is special, so won't you suckle with the mission? I never walk the streets, think it's all about me. Even though deep in my heart, it really could be. I just try my best to, like, go all out. Some might even say, you're shorty black, you're bugging out.
Zulu Nation, mother's last creation. Minds get flooded. Ejaculation right on the 2-inch tape. The abstract poet incognito runs the cape. Not the best, not the worst. And occasionally I curse to get my point across. So bust the force as I go in between the grit and the dirt. Listen to the mission, listen, missions I do work. As I crack the monotone, chilling up the jazz. So get your own. Smoking R&B cause they try to dupe me. Or the best of the back, but they can't do rap for it's abstract. Original, you can't get your own, and that's pitiful. I know I'd be the man if I cold yank the plug on R&B, but I can't, and that's bug.
Surrounded, posting, just like a migraine pound.
mic, please. Hip hop is living. Can't yank the plug. If you do, the result will end up kind of broke.
I am not an invalid, although I used to smoke the weed out. Ali Shaheed Muhammad used to say I had to be out. Scheming on the babies with the crazy booming back buns. Pushing on them real hard just so we can have the big fun. When I left Marusi, I was Boulevard status. Battling the MC was when Tip was at his maddest. It was one MC after one MC. What the world could they be wanting to see from little old me? Do I have the formula to save the world? Or was it just because I used to smoke the women and all the girls? I'm the type of brother with the crazy extended hand, kid. This by all my brothers, I was all up with my man did. Supposed to be my man, but now I wonder cause you're feeble. I go out with the strongies and I separate the eagles. It's your brain against my mind. My nose about to boot out. Or your nasty critters, even though you see I bug out.
Our evening began in Peter Sechelle's comfortable study in his New York townhouse.
No sleep till Brooklyn!
Yeah! Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, it's that end. From the Battery to the top of Manhattan.
Yo, Rook!
Hi everybody, my name is Jim Shear, and welcome to the Brouhaha, the unofficial, unsanctioned, unlicensed Beastie Boys podcast. And today's going to be a laid-back episode. No interviews, no guests, and no game of 20 questions. Although I am bringing 20 questions back, so if you would like to compete, please email me at beastiepodcast@gmail.com. And if you are not familiar with this fine game, which we haven't played in a while, I ask 20 Beastie Boys related questions, and if you can answer them all correctly, I will send you a very special Beastie Boys prize. And to date, only one man has been able to do this, Mr. Todd Perry. So if you want to compete, email me at beastiepodcast@gmail.com. And just to let you know, I don't always check that email, but if I am gearing up for a game of 20 questions, I will check it. And I also gave that disclaimer in case you ever email me and I don't respond to you for 5 or 6 weeks. Today's episode is all about what if. I'm a Beastie Boys nerd. I'm sure you're a Beastie Boys nerd. Heck, you're listening to this podcast. So from time to time, I think, what if the Beastie Boys chose that path that diverged in the woods? So I will talk about many what-ifs on today's episode. Now, obviously, the biggest what-if is what if Adam Yauch wouldn't have died? And I'm not going to tackle that because this podcast is intended to be light, and I don't want to get too heavy today, especially in light of the craziness that is happening in the world. But before I get to my what-ifs today, there are some major Beastie Boys happenings. Mike D is featured on the new Cassius song called Action, featuring Cat Power. If you don't know, Cassius features Philippe Zadar, and he is the man responsible for mixing Hot Sauce Committee Part 2. So I would imagine he and Mike's friendship was cemented during the Hot Sauce Committee Part 2 mixing sessions. So for this song, I read that Mike D showed up to the studio with a couple bottles of wine, and the following vocals ensued. So I've got the song for you right now. A couple things I gotta point out. This song starts very abruptly with Mike D. I think the video starts off with a few bars of instrumental, but this one kicks right in. So I'm not making any mistake on my end. This is how the song is. And I like it. How do I put this? It's almost as if Mike D is seasoning on this song. He's not a big piece of meat on this song. He's seasoning. He's a garnish. Nothing wrong with that. But to me, it's almost as if Cassius could have sampled some old Beastie Boys vocals. I mean, I like the new stuff, but yeah, I want some Ad Rock and Mike D meat on a track. But Mike does come strong in that second verse. Going bad in the woods. So here it is, Action from Cassius featuring Cat Power and the one and only Mike D.
It takes two, point on you, got no clue.
Maybe let's pretend.
Where you going, what you showing, cash you blowing, face still glowing, taking time.
Go. Action from Cassius featuring Cat Power and Mike D. And speaking of Mike D, he is scheduled to perform at Panorama Fest happening in New York City on Randall's Island on the weekend of July 22nd through July 24th. Now, I am 99.9999999% sure that Mike D will be doing a DJ set, because there's been some speculation online of what Mike is doing for a set, and, you know, I highly doubt Mike's gonna get up there and do some old Beastie Boys hardcore songs. So I would imagine he will be behind turntables. I would hope he would get on the mic at some point, but I'm assuming he's just gonna do a DJ set. The Julie Ruin is also on the bill, fronted by Kathleen Hanna, who happens to be the wife of the King Ad Rock. So one would assume that Adam Horovitz would be on Randall's Island that weekend. As you know, I mean, I'm freaking doing a Beastie Boys podcast. Huge Beastie Boys fan, but not huge enough where I'm going to buy tickets to a festival to see Mike D do a DJ set. Is that wrong of me? Now, if Mike called me up and said, hey, Jim, I want to do a podcast about my performance and then I want you to do a quick video. Yeah, sure. I'll go to a Panorama Fest. But at the moment, I have no plans to attend Panorama Fest. But if anyone else is, I'm very curious to hear about Mike D's DJ set. And like I said, I'm 99.999999% sure that he will be DJing that weekend. Hopefully, the Beastie Boys are still hard at work on their memoir. I read it or I was told that it was going to be released in 2017. But you know the Beastie Boys with deadlines and release dates. So hopefully we get that book next year. Mixmaster Mike recently put out his brand new mixtape called Magma Chamber. You can download it for free on his SoundCloud page. So go to soundcloud.com/mixmastermike. Look for Magma Chamber. You guys know how to work the internet, and you can download his mixtape. And it comes in like an hour chunk, so it's not broken up into tracks. And when you listen to the mixtape, you'll understand why it's not broken up into tracks, because it's all over the place. But whenever Mixmaster Mike puts out a mix, people are always interested to hear the Beastie Boys stuff that comes out on the mix. And for your listening pleasure right now, I have one of those Beastie Boys moments from his Magna Chamber mixtape. Enjoy. The clean vocals for that. See, if you're a DJ for the Beastie Boys, I'm assuming you could have access to certain master tracks in their library. Sabotage. That was good. Dang. So you gotta listen to the mixtape. There's a couple other Beastie treats. I may sneak one more of those into this podcast. And then speaking of garnishes, there are Beastie garnishes throughout the entire mix. But, I mean, that was like a full-blown Sabotage remix right there. And then my last tidbit of Beastie Boys news before I get into my official What If episode. It has been announced, I don't know officially, But at least to the people who helped put it on, it's been announced that MCA Day is coming back for its fifth installment, August 20th in New York City at the Littlefield Art Space in Brooklyn. That hasn't been officially announced yet, so I guess it's not officially in stone, but I'm pretty sure it's happening August 20th, Littlefield Art Space in Brooklyn. So book your travel, well, I shouldn't say book your travel plans. Don't book it until it's in stone, but start looking at hotels, start talking to your friends, think about what you're going to do in New York City that weekend. It's also being billed as the Funky Finale. So as you know, Mike Carney, who lives in Boston, has been organizing this for the last 4 years. This is going to be his Funky Finale. And hope it goes out with a bang. Going to be a good one. Last year, just it raised the bar with live performances from DMC and DJ Hurricane. And before we go to break, I'm going to give you another taste of Mixmaster Mike's Magma Chamber mixtape. Here is Shake Your Rump, Mixmaster Mike style.
Radio Dispatch, do you know who this is?
No, who is this is?
Drum roll!
Amen to that. And you know what? I've got a great idea. How about the Beastie Boys give all of their master vocal tracks to Mixmaster Mike, and he puts out a Beastie Boys mixtape every 2 months? How awesome would that be? Yeah, that's Beastie Boys done right. So right now, I want to talk about my Beastie Boys what ifs. As I said earlier, I'm a Beastie Boys fanatic, so from time to time, a lot of times when I'm making dinner, I'll think to myself, what if the Beastie Boys did this instead of that? How would their careers have been different? So I will tackle that subject on today's episode. The first Beastie Boys what if is, what if one of the Beastie Boys didn't like to rap? Think about it. The Beastie Boys started out as a hardcore punk group. Kate Schellenbach on drums, John Barry on guitar, Adam Yauch on bass, Mike D on vocals. Now, eventually, John Barry kind of lost his way and was phased out of the band, and they brought in Adam Horovitz, who was in another punk rock band, Young and the Useless. As I discussed with Kate Schellenbach on the last episode of the Brouhaha, the Beastie Boys got studio time and playfully recorded Beastie Revolution and Cookie Puss. And who would have ever thought that Cookie Puss would be a minor hit at college radio? And it was also getting played in New York City clubs. And that track, as silly as it was, kind of brought the Beastie Boys into the world of hip-hop. because then they eventually teamed up with Rick Rubin, who became their DJ. They got full-on into hip-hop, recorded License to Ill, and became the first hip-hop group in the history of popular music, in the history of the world, to have a number one album on the Billboard 200. But what would have happened if, say, Ad-Rock didn't like to rhyme? What would have happened if Mike D didn't like to rhyme? So I broke it down like this. First of all, if MCA didn't like to rhyme, I don't think the Beastie Boys ever get into hip-hop, because Mike D and Ad-Rock almost sound too similar in a way, and there's no different vocal texture there. So even if Ad-Rock and Mike D put out one rap album and it became a minor sensation, I don't see them going anywhere with hip-hop. What if it was MCA and Ad-Rock who liked to rhyme and Mike D didn't like to rhyme? So eventually, say Mike D gets phased out of the group and it's a two-piece with a DJ. I see the Beastie Boys kind of being like a third base, but you miss something with that third member. Because yeah, Run DMC had two MCs and a DJ, and a lot of groups had two MCs and a DJ, but with those three, you need that triple trouble. So even if MCA and Ad-Rock were fire on the mic, or MCA and Mike D were fire on the mic, I don't see them lasting more than two or three albums. So it's very fortunate that these three punk rock kids all love to rhyme. My next what if. What if the Beastie Boys never met Rick Rubin? Think about it. The Beastie Boys put out Cookie Puss. Then they enter the world of hip-hop. And they meet Rick Rubin, who has a bubble machine. He has turntables. He has foresight. He's buddies with Russell Simmons. They start Def Jam. If the Beastie Boys don't have that connection, how far do they go in the world of hip-hop? And I'm sure you know this, Russell Simmons is the brother of Joseph Simmons, who was in Run DMC, the world's biggest hip-hop group in the mid-80s. So if the Beastie Boys don't have that Rick Rubin connection, I don't see them going very far in the hip-hop world. Isn't it crazy to think about? It's also crazy to think about. Rick Rubin and Ad-Rock were friends, and there's the famous story where they were listening to demo tapes, and Ad-Rock fished out LL Cool J's demo tape. So if the Beastie Boys never meet Rick Rubin, maybe we don't have LL Cool J on NCIS Los Angeles. Maybe we don't have LL Cool J. We don't know. So if it were not for the Beastie Boys meeting Rick Rubin, maybe they kind of give up hip-hop, go back to their instruments, and just become a local New York City punk band and fizzle out two or three years later. Interesting to think about. I know Beastie Boys fans are split on Rick Rubin. Half think, yeah, he was a great mentor at the beginning, and he brought them to a certain level. And then other fans think, well, Rick Rubin was just controlling them. He didn't let them have the freedom that they needed to become the Beastie Boys. So say whatever you want, but I definitely think that the Beastie Boys meeting Rick Rubin took them to a certain level that they may have never gotten to. What if Def Jam actually paid the Beastie Boys? So this is one of the most contentious stories in Beastie lore. Beastie Boys put out License to Ill, becomes the first rap album to go number one on the Billboard 200. They have a successful tour off of License to Ill. Then they come back home. They say, hey, we want our money. Def Jam doesn't have it. Now, I read that Russell Simmons would always reinvest Def Jam money. So say the Beastie Boys make X amount of dollars on the License to Ill tour. Well, maybe Russell takes that money, puts it into promo for LL Cool J, throws some money EPMD's way, throws some money for publicists and whatnot, And then you reinvest in the machine to make it bigger and better. Well, that doesn't always work for artists because artists want their money now. So that's my take on the whole issue. Long story short, the Beastie Boys didn't get what they want from Def Jam, so they got out of their Def Jam contract and they eventually signed with Capitol. But what would have happened if the Beastie Boys came off a tour and Rick and Russell gave them their money? They would have stayed on Def Jam and they would have made a second album off of Def Jam. And what would that album have sounded like? I'm thinking it would have sounded a lot like License to Ill. Because if you think about it, the first few Run DMC albums all had a similar vibe. And I think if the Beastie Boys put out a sophomore album for Def Jam, it has big guitars, big 808 drum beat sounds, and it sounds nothing like Paul's Boutique, which was the ultimate left turn in music history. Now, speaking of Paul's Boutique, my next what if the Beastie Boys never discovered the Dust Brothers? So the Beastie Boys, they have their little beef with Def Jam. They don't get paid, so they work their way off the label. They move out west and they sign to Capitol, and then they have to put out the follow-up to License to Ill. Ad Rock is at a party with Matt Dyke. He hears these otherworldly sounds and he is intrigued, and that is how the Beastie Boys eventually meet the Dust Brothers, because Matt Dyke worked with the Dust Brothers. Matt Dyke is also friends with Mario C. Mario C is friends with Money Mark. So what happens, man, if Ad Rock never meets Matt Dyke? If the Beastie Boys never meet Paul's Boutique? Who produces their second album? What does their second album sound like? Do they do Check Your Head one album early? I don't know. Because once the Beastie Boys leave Def Jam, I don't think their sophomore album is going to sound like License to Ill Part 2. Because there's probably a whole bunch of animosity, and the last thing they want to do is to have an album that sounds like something that was produced by Rick Rubin, who's buddies with Russell Simmons. And I don't know where the Beastie Boys were coming at production-wise in 1987, 1988. Because I would think that a lot of the production on License to Ill was inspired by Rick Rubin. So if you have the Dust Brothers out of the picture, I mean, is Ad Rock making beats on his drum machine? I mean, he did lay down the beats for Hello Brooklyn on Paul's Boutique. But if you have the Dust Brothers out of the picture, you just don't have anything that's near to the quality of rich detail that we hear on Paul's Boutique. But on the other hand, maybe the Beastie Boys move out west. They say, dang, who's going to produce this album? And maybe they contact their old buddies Public Enemy. And maybe the Bomb Squad produces the Beastie Boys' sophomore album. And maybe that album sounds like Ice Cube's America's Most Wanted. I don't know. That's why it's fun playing these what-ifs. So back to that what-if quickly about the Beastie Boys never discovering the Dust Brothers. Keep in mind, if they don't discover the Dust Brothers, then they don't have that friendship with Mario C, and they don't have Money Mark. And if you don't have Money Mark, then you don't have a Check Your Head. Because I think the story goes that when the Beastie Boys were at the G-Spot, one of the fences broke, and it was probably Mario C who hooked it up. They called their carpenter friend Money Mark Nishida up, and he fixed the fence. And then, of course, Money Mark Nishida helped build the Beastie Boys studio, G-Sun, which was where Check Your Head was recorded. So my next what if the Beastie Boys toured off of Paul's Boutique? Would it have been any different? Because as we know, the Beastie Boys put on an awesome live show. So would the live show from Paul's Boutique have boosted album sales? Because sometimes you need to witness a song live for it to click. So maybe if you hear Shake Your Rump Live and you hear Hey Ladies Live and Shadrach, then you say, yeah, man, that's a great album. I'm going to go out and get it. I don't know. Another what if in the Paul's Boutique era, what if the Beastie Boys released Looking Down the Barrel of a Gun as a single? And this what if was inspired by Dan Leroy's For Whom the Cowbell Tolls book. Because he was saying that nothing was really sticking to the wall for Paul's Boutique. For whatever reason, nobody was getting it. A lot of the fans from License to Ill wanted a License to Ill Part 2, but there was some discussion that the Beastie Boys actually had a solid fan base in the skate punk underground, which became very apparent during the Check Your Head era. But there were some people discussing, some people who had their finger on the pulse. They said, hey, if we get this song out, it could explode in college radio and on the alternative charts. People said, well, the Beastie Boys are a hip-hop group, so it never happened. But what would have happened if Looking Down the Barrel of a Gun was released as a single? Well, it could have flopped just like the rest of the album, or maybe the skate punk underground gets it. Maybe it becomes a hit on college radio. And keep in mind, this is 1989. This was when alternative culture was just simmering. It was ready to reach a boil because it reached a full boil in 1991 when Nirvana released Nevermind. So maybe the Beastie Boys are 2 years ahead of the alternative nation explosion. Instead, they exploded onto the alternative scene in 1992, 1 year after Nevermind was released. Something neat to think about. So now we go into the Check Your Head era. What if Check Your Head was an all-instrumental album? Because keep in mind, according to Spin Magazine, and I've heard it a couple other places, Adam Yauch originally wanted Check Your Head to be an all-instrumental album. And then eventually, the Beastie Boys got together. Adam Yauch was vetoed, and they said, well, it can't be an all-instrumental album. So they had some hardcore songs on there, some Money Mark songs on there, and some solid hip-hop songs on Check Your Head, which, by the way, is my favorite album of all time. But what if it remained an all-instrumental album? That could have been it for the Beastie Boys. So they leave Def Jam. They put out Paul's Boutique, which is a critical failure. And then with their remaining money, they release an all-instrumental album. And let's say that flopped. What does Capitol Records do? They said, wow, we got the Beastie Boys and they flamed out in two albums. We're going to just drop them. Imagine that. It could have been all over after Check Your Head. Because if the public didn't get Paul's Boutique, why would they get an all-instrumental album from the Beastie Boys? That could have been it. And maybe, you know, maybe Capitol would give them one more chance. And maybe Ill Communication would then be the Beastie Boys' Check Your Head. But keep in mind, when Ill Communication came out, the Beastie Boys were touring arenas. So if Ill Communication is one album late, then the Beastie Boys are just touring large theaters off of Ill Communication. Something to think about. The next what if. What if the Beastie Boys didn't create So What You Want? So as the story goes, the Beastie Boys were finishing up Check Your Head. They sat back and they thought, you know what? We need one more song to make this right. One more song to make this click. So they went back to an old sample. I forget how it goes. I think Mike D had a collection of samples or something. And then they eventually just played instrumentals over the sample. They had Ad-Rock do some cool things on guitar. They had Money Mark do some cool things on the keyboard. And they had this brand new instrumental. And then Mike D was kind of rhyming over the rough version. And his wife, Tammy D, heard it. And she's like, so you guys are finishing up the album and now you're working on this new whack song? And that new whack song became probably, and this is a bold statement, the most important song in the history of the Beastie Boys. Because let's face it, Pass the Mic was released before So What You Want, but So What You Want is the monster single off of Check Your Head. I mean, that made things explode for the Beastie Boys. So if you don't have that super strong song like So What You Want, what does Check Your Head do? Is it as influential as it is? I don't know. That was Do or Die for the Beastie Boys, because if Check Your Head flops, then once again, Capitol rethinks why in the heck they ever signed the Beastie Boys in the first place. So What You Want explodes. It becomes a live staple in their set. It becomes an encore song. The Beastie Boys, I mean, I would assume that's their favorite Beastie Boys song of all time, because I remember hosting Live to the Five Boroughs on MTV, and when I got the script, I looked at it and I said, what? The Beastie Boys are playing So What You Want? That's awesome! I mean, it was 12 years after the fact, but they were still playing it live. And then the Beastie Boys played So What You Want at VH1 Hip Hop Honors, and when they performed on Letterman, when they were promoting Awesome I Shot That, they played So What You Want on Letterman. So it was always a favorite. And to me, if you don't have So What You Want on Check Your Head, it doesn't put the Beastie Boys back on the map. And I don't know if they become the alternative darlings they become in the mid-90s. My next what if. What if that dude Chris, who worked at Tin Pan Alley, didn't like the one rock song they were jamming out on? And the song in question is Sabotage. So when the Beastie Boys were recording Ill Communication, they were jamming out on a song. It was just going to be an instrumental song. What's with these instrumentals? A guy named Chris comes into the room, and he basically says, dude, that's the jam. Man, that's it. That song is it. Beastie Boys look at each other, and for a while, it was titled Chris Rock, because the guy, his name was Chris, and it was a rock song. So Ad Rock took the song. I think in the Scientists of Sounds booklet, Ad Rock says it was the first song started for Ill Communication and the last one finished. So he takes the song and he actually records the vocals for it on Mario C's 8-track. Isn't that crazy to think about? One of the huge songs of the 1990s was recorded in last-minute fashion at Mario C's house. And once again, for the second album in a row, the definitive song almost didn't make the album. So if you don't have Sabotage, well, go back to that Chris guy. If you don't have Chris saying, dude, that's a great song, did the Beastie Boys even include it on Ill Communication? And maybe they do include it on Ill Communication, but maybe it doesn't have any vocals. Maybe it becomes like a mullet head. Because remember, mullet head, well, was first an instrumental and then it did have vocals, but Sabotage. I mean, Sabotage was the lead single to Ill Communication, which is considered one of the great albums of the 1990s. And I don't know if it's considered one of the great albums of the 1990s without Sabotage. Now, without Sabotage, obviously, you release Sure Shot as the lead single off of Ill Communication, and then you've got Get It Together, and you've got Root Down. So I still think Ill Communication does well without Sabotage, but man, that's a slam dunk. And talk about sending the fans home happy. You end the show with Sabotage, there is nothing else to play. People just file out, and that's what they did at Lollapalooza 1994. Much to the chagrin of the Smashing Pumpkins. Speaking of Lollapalooza 1994, what if Nirvana played Lollapalooza? Because remember, originally, 1994, Lollapalooza was going to feature the Beastie Boys and Nirvana. Now, we all know that the Beastie Boys wouldn't have closed out Lollapalooza, because they didn't even close out Lollapalooza when the Smashing Pumpkins were on the bill to replace Nirvana. And I know that Smashing Pumpkins are probably still bummed
probably still depressed. Like, man, no one even gave a crap about us because the Beastie Boys, they just, they had the mic drop of Lollapalooza 94. So what would have happened? I mean, I love Nirvana. I love the Beastie Boys. The Beastie Boys finished their set and then Nirvana comes on. Do they step up? Or does Kurt Cobain feel self-conscious like Billy Corgan and says, man, how do we compete with this? The crowd just went bananas for the Beastie Boys. What do we do? And keep in mind, this was not Nirvana promoting the smash hit Nevermind. This was Nirvana promoting In Utero, which is my favorite Nirvana album. But I don't want to say Nirvana lost some momentum, but they did. They lost a little momentum off of Nevermind because, I mean, Nevermind knocked out Michael Jackson. In Utero was huge, but it was no Nevermind. So, who knows? Maybe because the Beastie Boys had an awesome live set every night, it forced Nirvana to turn it up. And maybe Kurt Cobain becomes a better front man. Maybe he talks to the audience more. Maybe he plays basketball with the Beastie Boys backstage, and I don't know. Once again, all what ifs. None of this can happen because unless we have a time machine, we can't change the past. But what if Nirvana played Lollapalooza 1994? My next what if. What if Ad Rock's friend Penelope didn't like that one Intergalactic song? Here we go again. In 1993, the Beastie Boys, I think off of a Bo Diddley sample, work on a song called Intergalactic. I actually have a sample of one of the early versions. So here's a taste of Intergalactic 1993 style.
Intergalactic, planetary, planetary, intergalactic.
Spice is the worm and the worm is the spice. I'm out of any alien.
Satellite, spaceship, communication,
gravity, phone in, space phone again.
Yeah. I'm getting stupider.
And I'm on Jupiter.
Oh, your anus.
And that shit's heinous.
And my name is Mike D.
I'm the first man on the moon. I'm with the 3-wood team.
Yeah. I've been spending animation in just the other day.
I was in the night, kissing on the Milky Way.
Because I'm getting funky with the lithium crystals.
Lieutenant O'Hara.
This is Kissel.
G7 level 9.
Now I'ma break it down with the Dr. Spock shit.
Pinch your fucking neck and leave it in the cockpit.
I'm like the cover up, Jimmy Smith, stay loose.
Well, I'll be breaking in space in my gravity shoes.
I got tickets to Interzone.
So watch your beat me up.
Kings in orbit with the scratching cuts.
I do doodle on a paper like my name was Ski.
In all galaxy is my bombing theme.
Well, I'm worth your while.
While your while my worth.
Planet Rhyme on is my place of birth.
What? I call like Sean Kemp from the Super Sun.
So apparently the Beastie Boys weren't happy with that and they put Intergalactic on a shelf. Now I think Ad Rock was at a party with his brother and his friend Penelope comes up and she said, well, whatever happened to that one Intergalactic song? And Ad Rock probably rubbed his chin and he said, yeah, Intergalactic. So he uses Mike D's vocoder. He does the famous Intergalactic, Planetary, Planetary, Intergalactic. They get excited about it again, and Intergalactic becomes the lead single off of Hello Nasty. But think about it. If the song is never released, what would the artwork look like on Hello Nasty? Because the artwork is all space-themed. And when I was talking to Say a few years ago, he said that before they came up with the space theme motif, it was going to have a classic mod look, and the album was going to be called Another Dimension. But without Intergalactic, you don't even have that classic mod look because you don't have Another Dimension because Intergalactic doesn't exist. And to me, that the lead single, the music video, the artwork for Hello Nasty, it all ties together. And without that song, I don't know, man. Hello Nasty just kind of loose. And to me, maybe even more so than Sabotage. I'm sure I flip-flopped on this over the years, but I think Intergalactic is the best lead single off an album the Beastie Boys have ever had. I remember the first time I heard it, I was listening to the modern rock radio station in Pittsburgh, and I was floored. I was blown away. And I can't imagine Hello Nasty without Intergalactic. So thank you, Penelope. And for a third album in a row, the album's definitive song almost didn't make the cut. Think about it. So what you want for Check Your Head? Sabotage for Ill Communication, and then Intergalactic for Hello Nasty. So at this point in time, if I'm the Beastie Boys, I'm saying to myself, if one of our friends or any type of audio engineer or studio worker likes a song, we got to put a lot of stock into that because they've been 3 for 3 at this point in time. All right, my next what if. What if the Beastie Boys don't sign Mixmaster Mike? Now, I'm like a lot of you. In 1998, when Mixmaster Mike joined the group, I was a little salty. I said, what about Hurricane, man? Because Hurricane had such a presence behind the turntables. And I know that the Beastie Boys wanted to do more with their live show with Mixmaster Mike. But remember, especially at the Tibetan Freedom concert at Randall's Island, Hurricane was throwing in different beats. So he had the DJ ability to go from one beat to the next during a live hip-hop song. And I think there's even, I forget what song it is, in 92 he does it. So over the years, Hurricane had that ability. Seems like the Beastie Boys never gave him that green light until that concert at Randall's Island. And then sadly, I think that concert at Randall's Island was DJ Hurricane's last live show. Maybe the Beastie Boys realized that Mixmaster Mike could do it better. But, I mean, scratch-wise, Hurricane can't compete against Mixmaster Mike. I mean, he knows that. But if you're just looking for a presence behind the turntables and looking for someone to throw in different beats, I mean, Hurricane could do it too. So I'm going to fall back on sports metaphors. It's kind of like the Colts. Do you stick with Peyton Manning, or do you go for the young superstar in Andrew Luck? And we could even take it back farther than that. Joe Montana and Steve Young. Both great quarterbacks. Both Hall of Fame quarterbacks. But let's face it, Steve Young was faster, younger, more modern than Joe Montana. So the 49ers had to say bye to Joe Montana, and Steve Young became their new quarterback. So maybe the Beastie Boys were presented with a decision like that. You know, they said, well, it's not that, I mean, Hurricane's a great DJ, but Mixmaster Mike is just a better DJ. So, but think about it. What if Hurricane stayed with the group and they had their meeting and they said, all right, we're going to do things differently. Just, you know, drop us different beats. Is Mixmaster Mike a better beat selector than Hurricane? Maybe Hurricane could reach, you know, deeper back into the old school. I don't know. It would have been interesting to see what would have happened with Hurricane behind the turntables with him switching off beats. I could go either way on this one. Because I would love, too, when Hurricane would rhyme, he'd come out and the Beastie Boys would play their instruments. But Mixmaster Mike does add so much to the Beastie Boys. And you can't have them both. It's like having two head coaches. You can only have one. I think you can only have one DJ. I say that, and Mixmaster Mike is part of the Invisible Scratch Pickles, where there are multiple DJs. All right, my next what if. A what if that I actually made a song about for my band, Deck of Jack. The song is called Why Did Mike? What if Mike D never took that bike ride? You guys know what I'm talking about. The year is 2000. Beastie Boys have announced that they're going out on a summer tour with Rage Against the Machine called Rhyme and Reason. I am ecstatic because the Beastie Boys never, ever visit Pittsburgh. They did once for Lollapalooza in 1994. 6 years later, they were coming back for Rhyme and Reason. I had connections at a record store, so I got my tickets in the pre-sale. Didn't have to worry about it being sold out, which it was later. And then Mike D went on a bicycle ride in New York City, flipped over his handlebars, injured his shoulder, had to get surgery. I believe it was an acromioclavicular joint dislocation, and the tour was done. And then we didn't see the Beastie Boys for another 4 years. Now, they did perform in 2001 shortly after 9/11, but the Beastie Boys did not tour again until 2004. So what if Mike didn't ride that bike? Beastie Boys would have toured with Rage Against the Machine. It would have been a fantastic tour. And being around all of that loud, angry punk rock music, maybe the Beastie Boys would have been inspired to make some loud, angry punk rock music. Instead, 4 years later, the Beastie Boys put out an all hip hop album. So do the Beastie Boys put out an all hip hop album if they tour with Rage Against the Machine? I don't know. And if Mike doesn't injure his shoulder playing drums, you know, I don't know if, because I asked Mike during the To the Five Boroughs era, I said, is this an all hip hop album because your shoulder's still screwed up? He's like, no, that's a very good question. No, he's like, we just decided to do an all hip hop album. But if Mike doesn't get hurt and they're around all that rock music, maybe what they want to play some rock music. But I was very depressed that that didn't happen. Yeah, it would have been nice to have the Beastie Boys tour in the summer of 2000. And what would have happened? Would they have put out an album earlier? I don't know. Couple more what ifs, and then we'll end this episode of the Brouhaha. Speaking of To the Five Boroughs, what if the Beastie Boys didn't release To Check It Out as the lead single for To the Five Boroughs? Now, to me, this lead single never made sense. You don't put out an album for 6 years. The album is called To the Five Boroughs. You have a song on it called An Open Letter to NYC. To me, that's the obvious choice for a lead single. And I remember listening to the album before it was released at Oscilloscope Laboratories, and that was the one song that stuck out to me. After listening to it once, I said, yeah, this is it. This is the jam, An Open Letter to NYC, and it makes sense for this to be the lead single. It wasn't. Now, my second choice for lead single would be Triple Trouble. The video is hilarious. To me, it's an all-time great, and it explains away what the Beastie Boys were doing for 6 years, because you knew once the Beastie Boys started granting interviews, everyone would ask, what's been going on for the last 6 years? What's been going on for the last 6 years? And this one, this video comically answers it. They were kidnapped by Sasquatch, and they were held captive for 6 years. So if the Beastie Boys let off To the Five Boroughs with Triple Trouble in that music video, I'd have been like, okay, that's funny. And then you follow it up with An Open Letter to NYC. So I never liked to check it out initially. And then when the Beastie Boys start performing it live and they had the Watch the Finger, then I got into it, then I got it. But I think that the Beastie Boys were really trying their best to sell this album to hip-hop radio. They were trying to get To Check It Out to be played on hip-hop radio, and hip-hop radio wasn't buying it. I remember the leading up to the release of To the Five Boroughs, the Beastie Boys, instead of being on any indie, alternative, or rock shows, they were on MTV's Hip Hop Week. And it was that week, Eminem was also featured. And I just thought to myself, no, hip hop radio ain't going to give you any love. It's all over on modern rock radio. That's where they love you. And imagine An Open Letter to NYC on rock radio. because it samples Sonic Reducer from the Dead Boys. I mean, that would have been a great modern rock radio hit to kick off to the Five Boroughs. It never happened. And to this day, people are still talking about To the Five Boroughs being one of the Beastie Boys' weakest albums. And then I have to interject and I say, listen, first of all, To the Five Boroughs, the Beastie Boys needed to do this. It was kind of hitting the reset button. Because how many times could you put out a handful of hardcore tracks, handful of hip-hop tracks, handful of instrumentals? The Beastie Boys needed to cleanse the palate, if you will. And to me, this is the Beastie Boys singles album. There are four quality singles on this album. To check it out, Triple Trouble, An Open Letter to NYC, and Right Right Now Now. So if any other hip-hop group puts out a tight hip-hop album with four solid singles, you wouldn't be hating on it. But a lot of people hated on To the Five Boroughs, and I get it. In the Beastie Boys' career, they only put out 8 studio albums, 7 of those with vocals, so, you know, they look at it more closely, and they say, no, man, I wasn't happy with To the Five Boroughs. I was happy in The Tour. Whew, forget about it, man. One of the best. And my final what if of this episode, if you're still listening, see, to me, all of this interests me. I don't know if it interests you. Some of you might say, shut up, Jim. Everything happened the way it happened for a reason. But my final what if the Beastie Boys are sitting on some unrealized gems? This does make me very curious. In November of 2011, Mike D, Ad-Rock, and Adam Yauch got into the studio. They ordered a lot of takeout, and they did some rhyming. I would love to hear that. I don't know if there's just hooks. I don't know if there's probably a whole bunch of unfinished ideas, but can't you give some of those snippets to Mixmaster Mike? Give some of those snippets to Cassius. Have him make another song about it. So, you guys know the Beastie Boys. You know, sometimes very self-conscious. Perfectionists to a fault. And they probably listen to this stuff and say, eh, nobody wants to hear it. But I want to hear it. I don't care how ugly it is. I remember when the Beastie Boys put out some old bullshit and I had a friend and they said, well, this is kind of crappy. And I said, this is awesome. And they said, really? I said, listen, the Beastie Boys could poop on an album and I would love it just because I'm a fan. But I would love if the Beastie Boys would invite someone not from their camp, maybe someone like me, to listen to these snippets or sessions and let me decide if it's worth listening to as a fan. Because remember, if the Beastie Boys didn't listen to Outside Parties, we wouldn't have Intergalactic or Sabotage. Think about it. And that will end this episode of The Brouhaha. If you want to compete in a game of 20 questions, please email me at beastiepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Jim Shear. Twitter recently celebrated its 10th birthday, and I love telling the story. The first time I ever heard about Twitter was through Adam Yauch. I was blogging for IFC, and I was interviewing Adam Yauch for his film, Gunnin' for That Number One Spot. And I had worked with the Beastie Boys previously at MTV, and I was breaking down my current employment situation. I said, yeah, well, I'm off TV now. Now I'm blogging. I'm doing this. I hope to get back to TV. And Yauch said, do you Twitter? Do you tweet at all? And I said, what? And just the way it sounded, it sounded like some type of online application. I said, no, what is that? And he's like, well, it's this new site, and you just kind of type out quick little thoughts like, hey, I'm at the cafe having a drink. I said, no, I'm not on Twitter, but I have to check it out. So who knew that Twitter would become Twitter? And of course, the first time I ever heard about it was through Adam Yauch, a man who was always 10 steps ahead of everybody. So thank you very much for listening to my What If episode of the Brouhaha. Until next time, my name is Jim Shear, and I will see yins later.
That's it, that's all there is. Come on.
Yo, we gonna end it on a 1, 2, 3 note. Are you ready? 1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
Guarantee we bring the brouhaha.
It's a brouhaha.